It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Carvana is so easy. Just a click and we've got ourselves a car. See?
So many cars. That's a clicktastic inventory.
And check out the financing options. Payments to fit our budget. I mean, that's
Clickonomics 101.
Delivery to our door?
Just a hop, skip, and a click away.
And bought.
No better feeling than when everything just clicks. Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
My uncle Dennis moved into a retirement community a few years ago, and he absolutely loved it. He kept inviting me to come visit, but I was always too busy. This June, I was finally able to go. It was just a week-long visit, but that was all I needed. I didn't have any specific plans while I was there. I found his place pretty easily. He lived in a gated neighborhood that was about 3 or 4 blocks wide. I drove past some of Dennis's neighbors and then parked in his driveway. He was already waiting on the porch before I could even knock. "Saw you on the ring cam," he said. "You made good time." He ushered me inside and gave me a tour. The spare room looked fine, but I opted to sleep on the living room couch. That way, I could watch TV on his giant screen while he was asleep. He showed me his backyard, which had a nice collection of bird feeders. It was a beautiful area. Until I noticed an old woman staring at us from the bushes. I jerked back in surprise. "Don't worry about her," Uncle Dennis said. "That's my neighbor Lois. She's a little weird. From Romania, I think. She always walks around the street and stares at people. You get used to it." "I will not get used to that," I said. That night, I was watching some reality show on Uncle Dennis's massive TV while he snored in the other room. All at once, the image on the TV changed from 5 women drinking wine to a grainy, black-and-white video of an old woman in a black ballerina dress. She was standing in the middle of a grassy area, and then she started to dance. There was something hypnotic about her movements. Repulsive, too. I looked around for the remote. Why had the channel changed? Then I realized I wasn't watching a movie at all. The TV was connected to the ring cam, so it was showing footage from the front yard. I looked back toward the TV and recognized my car in the background. The dancing woman was now gone. Unnerved, I opened the front door and peered outside. The yard was empty. Where'd the old woman gone? Had I imagined it? For the rest of the night, I tried to convince myself that it was just a lucid dream or something. I still asked Dennis about it the next morning. He shrugged and said, "Yeah, probably a dream." We spent the rest of the day walking around the neighborhood, meeting his friends, and having a nice barbecue. Lois didn't come, thankfully, but she lurked around the street and watched us for a bit. I only caught a glimpse of her long gray hair, the same hair as the ballerina. Was it the same person? It had to be. I had no idea what Lois's deal was, but I knew I was going to keep my distance. That night, I didn't even try to sleep. I was waiting for the ring camera to go off again. And just after midnight, the TV flashed on with grainy video of Lois dancing ballet in the front yard. It happened exactly like the night before. Same black tutu, same dance moves. But this time, I was ready. I jumped off the couch and raced into the front yard. I caught the old woman before she could dance away. I grabbed her by the thin shoulders. She didn't even try to fight me. She just slowly turned her head to face me. I gasped. Up close, I realized that this wasn't Lois at all. This was a completely different old lady. Unlike Lois, she was horrific. Her eyes were pointed in different directions, and her cheeks were sunken in from a total lack of teeth. How could I have mistaken this woman for Lois? They had the same hair, but every other feature was like a funhouse mirror version of Lois. "Who are you?" I demanded. Instead of answering, she leaned her toothless face forward and... I tried to twist away, which meant her scratchy lips made contact with my cheek. It was the most disgusting moment of my life. I pushed her away, but I could feel my skin burning from where her lips touched. I didn't try to go after her. I went inside and took a very long shower. Then I went back to the couch and just sat there for the rest of the night, trying to figure out what had just happened. Thankfully, Uncle Dennis always woke up super early, so I didn't have to wait long to tell him everything. At first, he didn't believe me. I mean, I couldn't blame him. An elderly ballerina in the night didn't make any sense. But then, he noticed a sore or something on my cheek, exactly where the woman had kissed me. I ran into the bathroom to see for myself. The middle of my cheek was speckled with tiny red and white boils. It looked like I had terrible acne in that one little spot. The sores continued to the edge of my mouth. Was it some form of herpes? It looked horrible. Not knowing what else to do, Dennis and I walked to the pharmacy just down the block so we could buy some skin cream. Right before we reached the community's front gates, I noticed Lois from the corner of my vision. Just like the day before, she was lurking in the bushes. As soon as we spotted her, she started to scurry off again, but something stopped her. Instead, she walked right toward me, her expression dead serious. Her eyes were locked on my brand new facial sores. "She came to you in the night," Lois muttered. "She kissed you." "Do you know what's going on?" Uncle Dennis demanded. Lois took a deep breath and explained that she knows all about the dancing woman. It, not she, followed Lois from her village in the old country. It reappears periodically, cursing houses with its dance. Over the years, she had seen this figure cause her friends and neighbors to die in car accidents, suffer heart attacks, and even get mauled by a bear at the zoo. It was always seen 3 nights before tragedy fell. "I sense darkness," she continued, "so I've been patrolling the community to find signs of the creature. I'm so glad I saw your mark. Now I can help you before she returns for the third night." I turned toward Uncle Dennis, silently praying that he believed her too. His expression seemed conflicted, but I think he could tell how freaked out I was. He eventually gave in and asked for Lois's help. "There's a very easy cleansing ritual," she explained. "I will do that in front of your house and you will be safe." I breathed out a huge sigh of relief. "I need supplies, though," she added casually. "You must pay me $500. Dennis went right back to being suspicious again, but I begged him to pay her. I didn't have enough myself. Once again, he gave in. After that, we got cream for my face and went back home. In less than an hour, Lois was back with a bag of Twizzlers and a gourd. That's it. $500 for Twizzlers and a gourd. She sat on the grass with the gourd sitting in front of her. As she snacked on the Twizzlers, she chanted some kind of spell. Then she smashed the gourd with a rock. The whole thing lasted about 10 minutes. That night, the dancing woman didn't come back. We were safe. The rest of my trip was pretty normal. We both decided to move on. After Lois did her ritual, I honestly had a great time. Though it always took me a while to fall asleep on that couch, I kept picturing that woman's toothless face. We also didn't see Lois for the rest of my trip, which was probably for the best. To this day, Uncle Dennis seems to think that the whole thing was a scam from the beginning. He says that Lois conned him out of the $500. He thinks that she recruited her sister to freak me out and then popped in at the perfect moment to ask for money. It made sense. Even though the woman was hideous, she resembled Lois in the blurry footage, and she had similar hair. Perhaps they were sisters. But I refuse to believe that. There had to be something more going on. After all, I still have a scar on my cheek in the exact spot where she kissed me.
My first job was at a fast food place in a really sketchy part of town. I won't tell you the restaurant because I don't want to get sued, but it was just one of those big ones. The work wasn't too difficult, and I really liked my coworkers. The only problem was my boss, Wayne. He was a sweaty, gross little man who shouted to us daily. He had a particular anger towards me. I think it's because I was the youngest one there, so he constantly berated me, usually in front of the customers. Aside from him, though, I really enjoyed my time there. It taught me a lot. Unfortunately, my last day on the job ended with the most horrifying moment of my life. The moment still haunts me to this day. Most of the shift went by normally, but 10 minutes before we closed, we had two final customers walk in. One was a large bald man in a tuxedo. The other was a beautiful woman in a tight red dress that barely hid her job. She was obviously a... well, you know what I mean. Because we were located in such a low-rent area, we tended to get a lot of customers who simply looked dangerous. Twitchy, dirty, strung-out people came in all the time, and I made sure to always treat them like any other customer. It wasn't my place to judge anyone. I took the couple's order with a smile. He asked for 3 combo meals, and all she wanted was an iced tea. He rubbed her back the entire time they ordered, which I pretended not to notice. At their table, the woman smiled politely as the man shoveled burger after burger into his sauce-covered mouth. Neither of them talked. Then he wiped his mouth against his sleeve and stood up to leave. The woman took the hint and stood up too. He started towards the door, expecting her to follow. But she said, "Daddy, let's tip the worker. She looks like she needs it." I pretended not to hear the insult. The man rolled his eyes, but he gave her a $5 bill and hurried over to me. She placed the bill in my hand, even though the tip jar was right there between us, but she looked me in my eyes and said, "Thank you." Then they both left. I looked down at my hand, a little weirded out by the experience, but I noticed that she hidden a slip of paper under the money. It said one word, "Help." I looked up to see if the woman was serious, but they were outside already. Without thinking, I raced after them. The man's car was parked in the handicapped spot next to the front door. He opened the passenger side for the woman, but then angrily shoved her into the car and slammed the door behind her. "Excuse me," I called out to the man as he was walking around to the driver's side. He stopped and glared at me. "You're welcome for the tip. Now go back inside." The woman stared at me, pleading through the windshield as he turned on the ignition. She looked like a truly broken woman. I raced across the parking lot where my own, much trashier car was parked. I hopped in and backed up my car about 20 feet, blocking the only exit from the parking lot to the street. He slammed on his brakes before he drove into me. Then he screamed furiously through his open window. "I'm so sorry," I shouted back. "New driver, just wait a sec." I knew what I was doing was extremely stupid. I was putting my own life at risk to help a complete stranger. The man jumped out of his car, leaving the motor running. He lumbered toward my open window. "What are you trying to do?" Before I could answer, my boss Wayne ran out to the restaurant and screamed, "Wait!" He was out of breath before he reached us. "Nancy, why are you blocking the exit?" I leaned closer and whispered everything to Wayne, including the hidden note. He nodded his head, acting like he understood. And then he said, "It's none of our business. Move your car." "Yeah," the bald man shouted. "Don't make me get my gun." "No need for that," Wayne said. "Go, get back in your car, and I'll get her to move." The man lumbered back towards his car, while Wayne reached through my window and literally yanked me out of my driver's seat. I tried to slap him away, but he wouldn't stop. "Just let the damn customers leave," he grumbled at me. "You're breaking the law." He was really hurting me, so I gave in and let him pull me out of my own car. Then he got in my car and drove the car out of the way. The bald man had just plopped back into his own car, the poor woman still inside. He was going to take her away to who God knows where. And thanks to my boss, there was nothing I could do to stop them. Suddenly, there was a flash of light inside their car. A horrible bang, too. Everything went silent for a second, and then the car horn went off. I couldn't exactly see what was happening, but I figured it out. The woman had shot him as soon as he sat down, causing him to slump face first onto the steering wheel. Then the car door burst open and the woman jumped up, holding the gun in front of her. She looked like a completely different person than she had inside the restaurant. I guess she'd finally been pushed too far. She took one wild look at Wayne, then shot him in the leg, calling him a stupid ass, and then ran into the distance. I called the police, but by the time that they arrived, she was long gone. Wayne took some time off to recover from his injury, but I never found out if he ever went back to work. I quit my job that night and never went back. A few reporters asked me if I wanted to comment on the shootings, but I never called them back. I still think about that poor woman, what she went through. I hope she's living a better life. My name is Gemma. I started college this year, applying for a bunch of scholarships and loans to pay for it all. I grew up in a foster home, and while my foster parents were great, they didn't have any money saved up for my education. They had six other kids to take care of. However, I'd been in contact with my birth dad, Richard, for about a year now. We talked on the phone every so often, and he always seemed happy to hear from me, but we definitely weren't close. I was beyond shocked when he messaged me out of the blue, saying that he'd love to help me with my education. He invited me over to his house for the first time, even though he only lived in one city away from me. I tried not to get my hopes up. After all, Richard had abandoned me when I was just a baby, and even when he re-entered my life, he never offered financial assistance of any kind. When we met, he handed me a small wrapped present. I tore it open, not sure what to expect. He had gotten me the latest iPhone, which was a huge upgrade from the ancient Motorola that I'd been using. He explained that he was giving me the phone and putting me on his plan. It wasn't the most generous present, but without a monthly phone bill, I'd be able to save up a little bit more money and focus on my studies. There was one catch, though. He'd only give me the phone if I promised to call him every Sunday. I didn't want to have him in my life, and once a week didn't seem like too much of a burden, so I happily accepted the gift. Honestly, it meant a lot that he wanted to strengthen our relationship. My foster parents had warned me not to get too close to Richard. They told me some really awful stuff about him, but I viewed this present as a sign that he'd finally changed. After 18 years of no contact, it seemed like he was already ready to start acting like a real parent. For the first 2 months of school, I called him every Sunday. We never talked long, but we always had pleasant conversations. He'd ask me about my classes and my new boyfriend. I tried to ask him about his life, but he always changed the subject back to me. As the semester wore on, my classes got a little crazy. One weekend, I completely forgot to call Richard. I texted him the next day and apologized, and his reply was friendly enough. He said, "That's okay, Gemma. Just don't do it again." Unfortunately, I completely forgot to call him the next week. This time, it wasn't because of schoolwork. It was because I was out with my new boyfriend, Dean.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We spent the whole day together. I didn't think about Richard until late that night when I texted him another apology. This time, he didn't message back. The next morning, I went to my classes as usual. At lunch, I got a call from an unknown number. It was a man's voice. He said he was at a nurse at the local hospital and I needed to go there right away. Dean had had an accident. I rushed to the hospital, where I found Dean in a coma. He'd been severely beaten the night before, and his body had been dumped in the hospital parking lot. I guess he was still semi-conscious when the hospital staff found him. I was horrified, and the only explanation that I had was that Richard was behind the attack and punished me for missing the phone call. No other explanation made sense, but I really didn't want to believe it. While I was standing in the waiting room, I immediately called Richard. He didn't answer. I was about to try again when he sent me a short message. "How's your boyfriend?" he added, with a laughing emoji. The doctor said they'd call me if Dean's situation improved. I ran back to my car and drove all the way to Richard's house so I could confront him directly. It took me an hour and a half to get there. I pounded on the door, and Richard answered right away. He tried to hug me, acting as if he had no idea why I was so upset. "What's wrong, sweetie?" I screamed at him, demanding to know if he was the one who attacked my boyfriend. He just shrugged and said, "I told you not to miss our Sunday calls." I was too angry to speak. My birth father was insane. He left the room to get me some coffee, and I used my iPhone to call the police on him. I'm pretty sure he could hear everything I told them. A few minutes later, a policeman arrived at the door. I was surprised at how fast it took. Richard casually invited him in and we all sat together in the living room. I struggled to explain everything, but I kept stumbling over my words. It didn't help that Richard was smiling the whole time. The officer took a bunch of notes and then asked Richard for his side of the story. He said that he had no idea what I was talking about. He then showed them a letter that I had sent them in the mail. I had written him several letters in the past, but I didn't see how that was relevant at all. The policeman read the letter with a look of disgust on his face. Then he handed it to me. It looked exactly like my handwriting, but I knew I didn't write it. The letter explained how I hated Dean and wanted to get him out of my life. It mentioned attacking him with a crowbar. The letter was definitely a forgery. The cop didn't care. He cuffed me and took me straight to a holding cell. I pleaded with him to believe me, but he just kept reminding me that I had the right to remain silent. While locked up, I found out from the lawyer they gave me that Dean had died in the hospital, and I was facing murder charges. I also found out that a crowbar covered with Dean's blood was discovered in my dorm room. I'm awaiting trial now, and no one will listen to me. The lawyer thinks I should plead guilty to get a lighter sentence. Since I've been locked up, the only person to visit me was Richard. He didn't admit to anything, but his evil grin made it very clear that everything went according to his twisted plan. "Don't worry," he said, before he left the visiting room. "As long as you're in prison, I'll come see you every Sunday." He got exactly what he wanted.
I always thought of myself as a patient person. You have to be when you run a business from home with employees working remotely, manage a successful TikTok channel, and meditate to keep your sanity. But nothing had prepared me for the nightmare that was my high school friend, Tara. We had kept in touch through WhatsApp over the years, and when she told me that she was coming to visit for 2 weeks, I was thrilled. She was vegan now, something I respected but didn't quite understand the full extent of. Nevertheless, I did my homework. I scoured vegan blogs, researched vegan products, and made a list of the best vegan restaurants in town. I even rearranged my schedule to accommodate her strict mealtimes. It was going to be perfect. Well, day one started off well enough. I picked her up from the airport, and she seemed genuinely happy to see me. But by day four, my patience was hanging by a thread. "Tara, how about this brand of almond milk? It's organic," I suggested, holding up a carton. Tara snatched it from my hand, scrutinizing the label like it was a murder suspect.
"No, this one has too much sugar. Can't you find anything better?"
We had already spent 2.5 hours in the grocery store. Tara's meticulousness about every ingredient was exhausting. But I tried to help, offering alternatives, trying to be supportive. Nothing was good enough. The next day was worse. We spent another hour at a different store, and Tara was no less picky.
"Why is it so hard to find decent vegan food here?" she complained.
I felt a surge of irritation. "Tara, I'm trying my best here. Can we just get what we need and go?"
"If you don't care about my health, then maybe I should just leave."
The thought was tempting, but I couldn't bring myself to say it. Things came to a head at a restaurant. Tara had ordered vegan meat with rice, but when her plate arrived, it came with bread instead. She stared at the dish, her face turning a dangerous shade of red.
"Excuse me,"
she called out to the waiter, her voice loud enough to turn heads.
"This was supposed to come with rice. Why is there bread on my plate?"
The waiter, a young guy who looked like he was having a rough night, apologized and offered to bring her rice. But Tara wasn't having it.
"You should know your menu better. This is unacceptable."
She was a full-on Karen, and I wanted to crawl under the table. As the days dragged on, I started to feel trapped in my own home. Tara's constant complaining, her rigid meal schedule, her picky eating, it was too much. One night, after another one of her meltdowns, I found myself fantasizing about kicking her out. It was a dark thought, one that surprised me, but I was reaching my breaking point. The turning point came when Tara found a journal I had been keeping. I wrote down everything. My frustrations, my thoughts about her visit, and how I felt like I was losing my mind. She found it while I was out getting groceries for yet another one of her specific meals. When I came back, she was sitting on the couch, the journal in her lap. Her face was pale, her eyes wide with hurt and anger.
"Is this what you really think of me?"
she asked, her voice trembling. "Tara, I..."
"Don't bother!"
she snapped.
"I can't believe you wrote this! I thought we were friends!"
For a moment, I was speechless. "Tara, do you have any idea how hard it's been to accommodate you? I've gone out of my way to make sure you have what you need, and all you've done is complain and make things difficult."
"Maybe I should just leave."
"Maybe you should," I replied, my voice cold. She packed her bags in silence. I watched, feeling a mix of guilt and relief. When she left, the house felt eerily quiet, but also peaceful. I took a deep breath, feeling the tension slowly dissipate. For the next few days, I focused on myself. I went for long walks, meditated, and spent time working on my TikTok channel. The space and quiet gave me time to think. A week later, I received a message from Tara. It was an apology. She admitted that she had been difficult and thanked me for trying so hard to accommodate her. She explained that she had been dealing with a lot of stress and anxiety, which made her act out. I felt a pang of guilt. Maybe I hadn't been as patient or understanding as I could have been. I replied, apologizing for my own behavior and suggesting we meet up to talk things through. We met at a vegan cafe, a neutral ground. Over coffee, we talked honestly about what had happened. It was awkward at first, but as we opened up, the tension eased. "I'm really sorry," she said, tears in her eyes. I didn't mean to make things so hard for you."
"And I'm sorry for not being more patient," I replied.
"I know you were just trying to stick to your diet." We spent the rest of the day together, visiting a nearby park and catching up like old times. By the end of the day, it felt like a weight had been lifted. As Tara left to head back home, we hugged, promising to stay in touch and visit each other again. This time, with a better understanding and a lot more patience. My name is Casey,
I was raised in Kansas, and I love my parents very much, but I've always known that I was adopted. Even though I'd asked my adoptive parents many times, they refused to tell me any information about my biological family. They said it was best that I never found out where I came from. As soon as I turned 18, I went down to the city government building and put in an official request to unseal my adoption records. It took less than 10 minutes for the clerk to print out my file and hand it over. All my life I'd waited to find out about my biological family, and I'd finally gotten the information I wanted. The record showed that my birth mother was named Leia. The birth father section had been left blank. I went home and got on my computer. Without telling my parents what I was doing, I got online and started searching for Leia. It took a while, but I eventually found an address. This was during the summer, right after I'd graduated high school. I went downstairs and told my parents that I was going to spend the day at my friend's house. They didn't suspect that I was going behind their backs. "No problem," my mom said. "Eat something first." She gave me a sandwich, made sure that I was wearing sunscreen for the day, and then sent me on my way. As I left, I started to feel really guilty over what I was doing. These were my real parents. They raised me, and they loved me more than anything. Biology didn't matter. But at the same time, I couldn't deny my curiosity. I needed to find answers. So I drove across town to my biological mom's address. She lived in a rundown trailer just outside the city. It was in a neighborhood I'd never visited before. Honestly, I didn't feel safe there. I knocked on the trailer's door. My birth record showed that she would have only been 34, but she looked much older. She must have had a really tough life. When I looked at her, though, I saw that her eyes looked a lot like mine. This was my birth mother. "Leia?" I asked. She seemed instantly suspicious.
"Whatever you're selling, I don't want any," she said.
She started closing the door.
"Wait," I said. "My name's Casey. I think I'm your daughter."
Right away, her whole demeanor changed. Her face brightened into a big smile, showing that she was missing a few teeth. She burst forward and wrapped me in a big hug.
"Casey,"
she whispered.
Come in.
She pulled me in. The inside of the trailer was even dirtier than the outside. There was a weird chemical smell in the air, and I wondered if she made some kind of... We sat on her torn, dusty sofa. She texted something on her phone, and then she started asking me about my life. I told her about all the sports I played in school. I said that I was planning to go to Kansas State on a volleyball scholarship. I told her about my boyfriend and my favorite movies and pretty much anything else I can think of. She seemed impressed. She said I had grown to a beautiful young woman and she was very happy for me. Then she got a sad look on her face and asked me about my adoptive parents. I answered her questions, but I didn't feel too comfortable telling her too much about them. This was about me and her. So I asked her about her job and any other family she had. She said she lived alone and didn't have any other kids. She was on welfare after getting fired from Dairy Queen, but she was optimistic about finding a new job soon. I appreciated how honest she was, so I decided to ask her the big question. "Why did you give me up?" She couldn't look me in the eyes.
"I assumed you knew," she said.
"Is it because you couldn't afford to have a kid?" I asked.
"Of course not!"
she shouted. It was the first time her voice was anything but pleasant.
"If I had a normal child, I would have kept it. I am a religious woman."
I had no idea what she meant by that. I was normal. And what did her religion have to do with anything? "Why did you think I wasn't normal?" I asked. She grabbed my wrist and twisted so that we could both see the palm of my hand. That was where I had a small burn scar from when I was a little kid. Leia stared at the scar.
"Oh my God,"
she said.
"They removed it."
Then she looked me right in the eyes.
You have no idea who you are, do you?
I pulled my hand away from her. I was starting to think that I'd made a mistake in coming here.
Casey,
she said,
you were born with a birthmark on the palm of your hand. It was in the shape of 3 sixes.
What?
I gave you up for adoption because you're the Antichrist. I didn't have the heart to kill you, but now that you've returned...
That's when I noticed that 2 men had entered the room. I guess Leia had texted them right when I'd arrived. All this time we were talking, she was just distracting me, waiting for these men to come. They each had daggers. What happened next was a total blur. It was like I left my body completely. But what I do know is that I hit Leia right in the face and she fell onto the floor. Then I pushed those 2 men and raced out of there, jumped in my car, and drove all the way back home. My parents were shocked to see me.
Are you okay?
Mom asked. I told them everything that Leia had said.
Am I the devil?
I asked. Both Mom and Dad burst out laughing. They came over and gave me a big hug.
Oh, honey, Dad said. That burn mark was from when you accidentally picked up a hot coal when you were a baby. It was at a barbecue. Your birth mother is completely insane.
Instant relief washed through my body.
Thank God. It was all just the ravings of a mad woman.
But the more I think about it, the more this doesn't make sense. How did she know about the burn on my hand? Who were those other men who came for me? I still don't have answers to those questions. I keep thinking about them. Am I really just a normal kid, or are my adoptive parents lying to me?
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me, about to get them, all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.